This is CBS Eye on the World with Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, and we're very pleased to welcome someone who helps us understand the suspect nuclear weapons program in Iran and what is to be done. David Albright, founder and president of the Nonprofit Institute for Science and International Security. David, good evening. The meeting at the IAEA about the cameras observing the suspect activity in Iran. The end product was that Iran is now deliberately rebuking the cameras, the IAEA, any sense that there'll be monitoring of the conduct in Iran. What now, David? How do you characterize the Iranian position? Are they negotiating or did they leave the room? Good evening to you.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to put pressure to get their way, and it's not working. I mean, they've removed these cameras that are part of this joint comprehensive plan of action and the monitoring established by that. There is still the monitoring that's associated with the safeguards agreement, which is the more fundamental agreement on Iran committing to provide full declarations, to not divert material. So there's still that part of the verification that's still intact. But I think what's happened is that it's quite clear that Iran is trying to get away with outright lies and deception. And when it doesn't get its way, namely the IAEA Board of Governors decided to censure Iran for its lack of a full declaration about its past nuclear activities. They then, almost like spoiled children, say, well, we're going to now take away some of our toys. And that's the cameras under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And what they're trying to do partly is to distract attention from this fundamental violation of the safeguards agreement, which is core to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, that is core to Iran's commitment not to build nuclear weapons. And so by focusing on the cameras, they're hoping two things. One, they'll distract attention from this fundamental violation that they've done, and they'll put pressure on particularly the EU to go soft on Iran, to give in. And the EU has a habit of giving in. It's not a very tough group of people.
So how do you evaluate this measure in terms of its impact? What leverage is there behind the censure? It seems that Iran, as always, just moves ahead and goes on to the next step. And as you say, some of it to deflect attention, some of it to focus attention. But the end result is that they're using more and more advanced centrifuges, the more advanced in their enrichment program. How do you assess that today?
Well, one is Iran has enough highly enriched uranium today to build a nuclear weapon, be a crude one. They have to modify their weapons design, as we know from their crash nuclear weapons program of the 2000, early 2000s, but they could do it. And so in a sense, we've crossed a threshold and we can't go back. They wanted to make weapon grade uranium instead of this highly enriched uranium, which is enriched to 60%. They wanted to go to 90. They could do it within a matter of a week or so. So I think the breakout timeline is now zero. If they wanted to get the weapon grade uranium, it's just a few weeks. And they could even have enough for two within a month. So I think we've in a sense, any benefit that the JCPOA could provide is gone. And I think we have to recognize that now that we've crossed this threshold, that we can't just go back to this deal. There has to be a new strategy developed, and pressure is going to have to be a very large part of it. And I'm not talking just about the sanctions, what became under the Trump administration sort of a maximal effort. That isn't a maximal effort. They developed one tool of a set of pressure strategy. And I think that's what the United States and it's going to have to convince Europe to turn and there's a precedent. Europe didn't want to get involved in Ukraine. I mean, I can remember sitting in Germany, listening to their foreign minister who kept saying, you know, as long as we're talking, they're not fighting, failing to recognize that was allowing Russia to prepare its invasion. And I think what has to happen is Europeans have to understand that Iran has fundamentally has just gone too far, and that they have to work to snap back the sanctions under the JCPOA. Iran is clearly not committed to this deal anymore. They need to snap back the sanctions, which will not only have a real effect and an important symbolic effect. It would snap back international sanctions, the UN sanctions, and that would further stigmatize Iran and allow for a larger coalition to then apply pressure via sanctions, through diplomatic pressure, also through arming Israel more. In a sense, Israel is a little bit like Ukraine. They're fighting the evil. Russia's evil, Iran is evil, and it's Ukraine fighting Russia. We need to allow Israel to fight Iran. They're already in a shadow war, a low-level war, and I think that some of that is going to be stepped up, and I think we should make sure that we're providing Israel what they need in order to do that via military equipment, intelligence, political support.
Moscow is making overtures to the Middle East. We have something in common, that kind of overture, a high price of oil. Does Moscow have any weight in Tehran? Because the GCC indicates that it wants Moscow to do something about this threat.
Well, I think Russia could probably do something, but I don't think they have as much leverage with Tehran as with some of their allies in the Middle East. I think the Russians also have little incentive. I think they want to stir up trouble for the United States and Israel and their allies. And so I don't think, one, they have as much leverage as we might think. And two, I don't think they want to apply it.
When you talk about the disincentives to Iran, do the elimination, these accidents that have occurred to a lot of their key people, does that in fact set them back? Does it make people wary of participating, the scientists especially, in the nuclear program? What impact has that cumulative that those attacks have had?
Yeah, in terms of the people, it's hard to know. I mean, listening to Iranians, one of whom was actually almost killed in one of these attacks, but he escaped. They are worried about that they see that as one of the main goals of these kinds of operations, is to scare people away. Now, I don't know how to measure that. I don't think we have enough, in a sense, eyes and ears in Iran to know. But it's certainly something that is certainly worried top senior officials in Iran. Now, when hardware is destroyed, I mean, you can measure that. And we just did it. We do studies on how many advanced centrifuges they've installed, how many they could install, and the two or three attacks that went after centrifuge manufacturing did set back their program. And it's caused them to be less able to deploy or install advanced centrifuges today than if those attacks had not happened. And so kinetic attacks against nuclear sites can actually set them back. Now, I'm not advocating a full-scale attack on Iran by any means, but I do think that in this conflict that's developed, the United States should be supporting Israel in what it's trying to do to set back that program and slow it down and discourage it. I think in the United States, we would draw the line that we can't support killing of the scientists or technicians, but we're not asked to participate in that.
David Albright is the president of the nonprofit Institute for Science and International Security based in Washington, D.C. Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.